Hey guys, Raphael here of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Did you say podcast? Dudes, dudettes, you're listening to the podcast on the Geekcast Radio Network.
This is Casey Kasem, and you're listening to the GCRN Retro.
Hello, everybody. Things may look funny, but don't you worry, you're in the right place and the right time. And what time is that exactly? The year 1984. That's right, we've traveled back 30 years to discover what great things 1984 had to offer. We call this GCRN Retro, and with me on our next voyage is TFG1 Mike. Hello.
Hello.
And Mike is clinging to life as we speak.
Yes.
He's been dying a slow death over the course of the last week, so we apologize if he dies on air, but that would be something that would get us a lot of attention here on Geekcast Radio Network.
The network better get paid if I die on air. Life insurance for podcasting.
If only.
You're telling me.
So besides being sick, how have you been?
I'm all right. Trying to find new and interesting ways to get stuff on the GCR feed, the Geekcast Radio feed. I've done like 3 to 4 different interviews close to the end of the year here. I interviewed John Semper Jr., celebrating 20 years of Spider-Man the Animated Series, and a few other people. Because right now, episode 75 of GCR will be our 2014 year in review, kind of ending our 5-year celebration of the network being online for 5 years. So I'm thinking, what else, you know, is going to interest us to do episodes for the GCR feed? And I'm like, hey, let's bring retro back. And that has turned into a nightmare.
Nonsense. These retro episodes are definitely take a lot of time, take a lot of editing, take a lot of scripting and stuff like that compared to our normal episodes. We've done a few before. If you've been a longtime fan of the network, you've heard two of these before.
87 and 2002.
Yeah, so this will be the third GCR in Retro. It's just kind of something we do here and there. And we usually start off each episode by discussing where we were in that year. So, Mike, 1984, where were you? What point in your life were you? Where were you living? What were you doing? Take us back to TFG1 Mike in 1984.
I was still living in Massachusetts, born and raised Stoughton, Massachusetts, lived in Kingston from the time I was born till the time I was 13, 12 or 13, somewhere around there. 84.
You were 4?
Yep. 84 was interesting because I was a kid that was big in... I still am today. I don't talk about it much because I just don't think that sports talk is really like what our audience wants to hear. I know some people have said that they want to hear sports talk on the network, and I know Dan and Chuck and Greg over at Talking in Circles did a couple of sport things and everything else. Being born and raised in Massachusetts, it's all about the Red Sox, Patriots, Bruins, and Celtics for professional sports. It's like Jimmy Fallon's character Ben said in 2005's Fever Pitch, Red Sox, sex, and breathing in those order, in that order.
That's a bad order.
Shut up. How long have the Cubs been without a World Series? Thank you. Anyway,
long time.
Yeah. So 84. I was really big into. I'm not so much big into the NBA anymore because it's the landscape has just changed so much over the last 20 years.
Right.
Hell, even 30 years. But as a kid, oh man, watching Larry Bird and Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish and
Magic
Danny
Johnson.
Ainge and Magic. Well, yeah, he was on the Lakers.
Your arch rival.
Yeah, just watching, you know, the Boston Celtics and, you know, hearing Johnny Mosley or I think that was his name. Johnny Most, that's what it was. Just hearing him as the announcer, that was awesome. Watching Red Sox games. 84, I probably was in preschool because I went into kindergarten when I was 5. So preschool was like in the morning, so if there was a day game, like a weekday game in the afternoon, as soon as I got home from preschool at 4 years old, I was glued to the TV watching the Red Sox. I didn't care who they were playing. I'm trying to think. It took me a while, and I'll say this later when we get to a different section for it, but it took me a while because I was only four. I understood stuff, but I didn't really get like really into certain television shows. But I'll say one thing, you know, the cause, how can you not, you know, recognize the cause in the year of 84? Obviously Transformers started this year, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, 84 was an interesting year.
Yeah, a lot of things started in 84, and I think a lot of the discussion that we will be having today is going to be dealing with not necessarily, I mean, some stuff that we were both alive, so it will be some stuff that we saw firsthand, but a lot of it will be stuff that we saw in later years, whether it be in reruns or future seasons of these shows, not necessarily the first season, but we would have seen like the second, third, fourth seasons of some of these shows. So we do have firsthand accounts, maybe not necessarily in 1984 for some of these things, because, you know, as a 3- and a 4-year-old, we might not have been watching some of the actual primetime television shows. Some of them we might have seen, you know, as other people in our household would have been watching, or this, that, and the other. But some stuff that not necessarily we would have been seeking out ourselves, so to speak.
Yeah. I think by the time I was 5, 6, and 7, you know, 85, 86, 87, that's really when I was seeking stuff out.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. But what I do remember from being 3 is that obviously I was not in preschool or kindergarten yet, so I was home a lot. So this is the time where I would have been, you know, watching a lot of the more early childhood or younger demographic type cartoons,
Sesame Street,
that type of stuff, and some of them we'll get to here in a little bit. Probably was the beginning of when I started liking the Cubs. Since you talked about Red Sox in 1984, it was a big year for the Cubs. I don't really remember much of that. I don't remember. I didn't go to a Cubs game until 1986. Or 87. I'm sorry, 1987. 1987 was my first Cubs game, so it's a few years before I actually attended, and I wasn't like watching them nonstop until closer to, you know, 1988, 1989, in that range. But my mom would have been still watching. My brother would have still been watching them in 1984. So it's probably when I first started at least realizing the Cubs were a thing and baseball was a thing, which obviously. One of the biggest things that I like in life is baseball, so there's the beginning of that. But other than that, not a lot I can remember from when I was 3, so I'm not going to try to say that I remember things that I can't remember.
Exactly. For me, I didn't go to my first Red Sox. Like, I've been to Fenway Park twice in my lifetime. I wish it had been more times, but I remember going in, like, 86 and stuff like that, and just, you know, whether it's Fenway Park or whether it's Wrigley Field, those are two of the key ballparks in America. You know, Wrigley's got the, you know, the Ivy Wall, Fenway's got the Green Monster, and back in those days, you didn't have seats on the Monster. You just had the Monster.
Right. All right. Well, with that, we will get into our first section. And we'll take a quick break, let you listen to some interesting sound bites that might take you back to 1984.
When I gave my daughter to this man, I thought he was going to be a doctor.
Clip State
Hall. No, I mean, look at the inscription on this, please.
To Elvin, straight from my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff, this is really very sweet.
That's right. And he's going to pay me back for this. Mr. Wilderness is going to have to sell a whole lot of sleeping bags and campers and trail mix in order to give me the money back for this thing, boy.
Cliff, try to be rational.
Try to be rational. I tell you how rational I can be. I hope that he goes out into the wilderness and gets poison ivy and comes back and I have to treat him. Then he will find out how much sick people get charged.
Cliff! Jeff, you're going off the deep end. Now, you listen to me. This boy is our son-in-law. He has married our daughter.
Please don't remind me.
But you owe it to Sandra and Elvin to let them lead their own lives. Now, it's obvious Elvin's not interested in going to medical school right now, but that could change. Give him a year. Just a year to do whatever he wants. If it doesn't work out, he could always reapply.
She's gonna open up this wilderness store in Brooklyn sometime in the winter, you say. Now, do you have a job between now and then?
Yes, I do have a job, and I'm proud to say it's in the medical profession.
Really?
Yes. I'll be working with a major pharmaceutical firm, Benex Industries.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a big company.
What are you doing for them?
Well, it's kind of an entry-level job.
Entry-level?
Yeah, when the pill bottles come to the end of the assembly line, I check to make sure that the safety seals are on the caps.
Well, now that sounds like a great job to me.
It is. It really is.
And I'm sure that they'll have all the money they need while Sandra goes to law school. Honey, this is gonna work out.
Mom?
Yes?
I'm not going to law school.
What?
I decided not to go to law school.
What do you mean you decided not to go to law school?
Well, this is our dream, and so I'm going to get a temporary job until the wilderness store opens, and then I'll be working side by side with my husband.
Sandra, what are you saying? You have always wanted to go to law school. You've never talked about anything else.
I changed my mind.
Change it back. After all the money we spent sending you to Princeton? Sandra, you owe us $79,648.22, and I want my money now. I'm not going anywhere till I get my money. I'll take whatever she's got. Empty her pockets. I want to know now. No, I'm not having this. No.
Well, really, both of us, we have to be calm.
You calm down. If Elvin thinks that he is going to come in here and drag my baby off into some harebrained business scheme and ruin what is potentially the greatest legal mind of this century, he's going to have me to deal with. And then he can come to you for treatment.
I understand and I agree with what you're saying, but you just said to me, why don't we give them a year? And if it doesn't work, then they can reapply. What I want to know is, how is it that you get to rant and rave and I'm the one who has to be calm?
Because that is my baby in there.
But that's my baby,
no,
too.
No, you don't understand, honey. You did not have that child. I had that child. I was the one who was on that table screaming, take it out. And if it takes last breath in my body, Sandra is going to become a lawyer.
Yeah. Okay, what do you want to do?
Oh, it's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
She'll divorce him.
Sandra is in love with the boy, dear.
Well, then you take Elvin.
I'll take him?
Yes, you take
him. What am I going to do with
him? You take him on a long trip in the country and drop him off.
Maybe the world is blind, or just a little. You can't be sure of anything anymore, although you
All right, as you can tell, we're starting off today talking about the TV shows of 1984. A couple things before we get into the actual shows, maybe some headlines from the year. This is the year where Where's the Beef? The catchphrase in the commercial was first broadcast. So you can thank 1984 for having to deal with that for the last 30 years. And on September 10th, 1984, the game show Jeopardy! Returns to television by daily syndication with a new host, Alex Trebek. It had last aired in 1979, so it spent five seasons off air. Comes back in 1984 with Alex Trebek, and obviously the rest is history since it's still airing. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. The 84 era, you know, starting this year in 1984, is the only era I ever knew of. Like, Alex Trebek is the only Jeopardy host I ever knew. You know, I've seen the other host who I can't think of off the top of my head. You know, I've seen videos, and I know we're not talking about this, but since they kind of go hand in hand with each other, I've seen Chuck Woolery on the original Wheel of Fortune. I'm sorry. Pat Sajak and Alex Trebek were the nighttime game show hosts of the 80s. They just were.
Yeah, and I don't even remember Jeopardy before Alex Trebek, so...
Yeah, I don't.
Since I basically wasn't alive in 1979 when that was happening.
But I'm just saying, like, when you hear Jeopardy, you think of from 1984 to whenever now is. Right. You don't think... Like, I don't think of the 60s version or whatever it was. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, good.
Definitely a big moment, and one that hasn't, one show that hasn't missed a beat since then. We're going to quickly go into like some shows that debuted in 1984, some shows that returned after a hiatus, and some shows that ended in 1984. Then we're going to just do a real quick look at the ratings from 1984, which shows were the highest rating, which channels were doing well. And then we're going to get into some of our favorite shows from that particular year. So starting off with the debuts, shows that started in 1984, we have such shows as Night Court, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, from Telecast Season 1, Kids Incorporated, Punky Brewster, Hunter, Highway to Heaven, The Cosby Show, Who's the Boss, Three's a Crowd, Miami Vice, Murder, She Wrote, and Charles in Charge. So there's a ton of shows that started in 1984 that lasted longer than 1984. It wasn't like a bunch of shows started that were, you know, one-season things and that were done. You know.
Well, that's because back then the TV landscape was so like today, you know, and I'm sorry to cut you off here, but today networks don't give television shows a chance because all is they're worried about is the ratings and the money. And it makes no sense to me with TV today that they put all this promotion into a show. Doesn't matter what show it is. Could be any show. Put all this promotion into a show, create official Twitter and Facebook accounts for the show, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then, well, the show isn't doing well enough, so, gone. Yeah,
two episodes later, it's done because it didn't get the right feedback.
Right, and in 1984, we didn't have that.
Yeah, mostly probably due to the fact that we basically have three major channels that people are watching as far as new shows. I mean, you have your ABC, your CBS, and your NBC. This is before Fox, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, before we had this revolution where you got 1,000 different channels, this, that, and the other. But yeah, I mean, if you think about that, almost every show that I listed on there was a multi-season show. I don't know how long Hunter lasted because I'm not real familiar with Hunter. But if you think of like Who's the Boss, The Cosby Show, Murder, She Wrote, Charles in Charge, Miami Vice, those shows lasted seasons and seasons and seasons. So definitely a lot of cool stuff starting in 1984. And then a couple things that returned after a hiatus. We talked about Jeopardy, which had last aired in 1979, which then came back in 1984 to stay. A couple other game shows. Let's Make a Deal had stopped airing in 1981. It came back in 1984, as well as Password Plus had stopped in 1982 and came back in 1984. I don't know what People Are Funny is, but that apparently last aired in 1960. And then 24 years later made a debut or a return to television on NBC.
Hunter had seven seasons.
Hunter even had seven seasons. So yeah, all these shows had a lot of seasons. Anything as Jeopardy, the biggest return, or in Let's Make a Deal, probably.
As far as overall shows,
the return this year after hiatus.
Oh, the returns.
Yeah, if you were listening to me.
Yeah, sorry.
Asswipe. yeah, I think Let's Make
I
a Deal
am
after
dying
being out
over
for 2 years
here.
In Jeopardy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Jeopardy and Let's Make a Deal are the two biggest. Password Plus. I don't even remember that show.
I have no idea what People Are Funny is.
Yeah.
As far as shows that ended in 1984, we had Heart to Heart, One Day at a Time, Happy Days, Three's Company, the Dean Martin Celebrity Roast, Captain Kangaroo, and Fantasy Island. Which one out of those?
Deplane.
Which one out of those was the saddest that you would have seen? If you, I mean, obviously you weren't watching these as a 4-year-old, but looking back, which one would be the one that you were saddest to see go out of that group?
Three's Company, hands down.
Three's Company, not Happy Days?
I know everyone loves Happy Days and everyone loves the Fonz, and that's all well and great, but Happy Days was a show from the based in the 60s. And I just...
Yeah, I could see Captain Kangaroo. I like that show.
Yeah.
But not obviously a lot more big names starting in 1984 than ending in 1984. Oh, yeah. As far as our household ratings, going into the Nielsen's ratings here, because I was able to get some information on that, this is how it broke down. I'll give you the top 10. Number 10 was Falcon Crest. Number 9 was Knott's Landing. Number 8 was Murder, She Wrote in its debut year. Number 7, Simon and Simon. Number 6, The A-Team. Number 5, Family Ties. Number 4, 60 Minutes. Number 3 in its debut year would be The Cosby Show. Number 2, Dallas. And number 1, Dynasty. So Dynasty and Dallas at the top 2 spots.
I always wanted those two shows to have a crossover. Like, I know one is ABC and one is CBS, but, I mean, like, that is the the characters from Dynasty and the characters from Dallas. Imagine those.
Yeah.
Interacting with each other. Imagine Blake interacting with JR. It just, that would be so amazing.
And to kind of give you guys an idea of what the TV landscape was in 1984, you know, because obviously we're currently, you would know a little bit different about which channels are doing well, and you know, is Fox the main channel, is you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, whatever. Back in 1984, it was pretty cut and dry. Even though ABC has the top show overall with Dynasty, they were not doing super well in 1984. They only had two shows in the top 20. So it was Hotel and Dynasty were the only two ABC shows in the top 20. So ABC was not doing particularly well in 1984. CBS had 10 out of the top 20. And NBC had the other 8. So CBS was doing real well. CBS was Dallas, 60 Minutes, Simon & Simon, Murder, She Wrote, Knott's Landing, Falcon Crest, Crazy Like a Fox, Magnum P.I., Newhart, Kate and Allie. So a lot of things on CBS doing pretty well. NBC, you had Cosby Show, Family Ties, The A-Team, Cheers, Riptide, and Highway to Heaven and Night Court. So it was basically a CBS and an NBC going head-to-head here in 1984.
Yep.
But getting into some of your favorite shows or what you would have been watching, what were your favorite things that 1984 had to offer, whether they were returning or new shows? What would you have been watching if you were an adult in 1984?
If I was an adult in 84?
Yeah, if you were watching all these primetime shows and you had your choice, which ones would you have watched or as a teenager or whatever?
Honestly, it came down to a lot of the comedies, and this is where, you know, today, comedies don't get enough of a chance. Like, back then, The Cosby Show ran for 9 seasons. You know, Family Ties ran for X number of seasons. Who's the Boss? You know, those kind of shows. I was also in 84, still watching, obviously, Knight Rider and A-Team and... you know, all that stuff. But, you know, Cosby Show, that was a vehicle for learning. It really, really was. That show, even today, if you showed children certain episodes of The Cosby Show, they could learn from that show. You know, the whole Halloween episode, I forget what season it was in, but Rudy and, not Kenny.
Yeah.
No, Rudy and Peter, her little white friend that gets scared of the dentist.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Rudy and Peter were going trick-or-treating, and Cliff and Claire said, okay, well, the purple bag's for houses that you do know. The red bag is for houses that you don't know. And by the end of the episode, which I thought was really good, that makes sense. You know, you get, you know, you go to the people that you know, like family members and teachers and stuff like that. And then you just go random trick-or-treating and find, you know, strangers so the adults can inspect the candy. So basically what Cliff was doing back then is Rudy and Peter could have the purple bag and he and Claire could have the red bag. He's just getting a bag of candy for himself. But, you know, stuff like that, stuff like teaching Peter to be not be afraid of the dentist. And then The Cosby Show eventually went into more, obviously not necessarily quote unquote adult themes, but as the children grew up and as, you know, Sandra and Eldon and all this and all that. And I still laugh my ass off to this day when, you know, Sandra tells them, "Oh yeah, I'm not going to law school either. I'm going to help Eldon in his pet store or whatever it was." And Claire just, because Claire Huxtable, she's always calm. You know, Cliff's usually the one that goes off at the mouth. And she just says, "Oh, hell no, you owe me blah, 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 this amount of money, and I want to get paid," because she paid for her law, for her to go to law school. It's such a good show. You mentioned the A-Team. A-Team, for me, was MacGyver Lite. Or if MacGyver had had a team instead of just himself, because they were always pulling MacGyver stunts in solving cases. And then, you know, Knight Rider, how can you not want, you know, to be in a talking
cop? How did I know
cop?
You were going to mention Knight Rider?
Oh, come on now. You can't mention the 80s and not mention Knight Rider.
Yeah, I kind of had an interesting way of going through my list. I didn't make a top 10 list or anything like that. What I did is I went through the week and actually decided what I would be watching each night. Mm-hmm. There's a couple nights that I wouldn't have been watching anything. but Sunday, I would have had – too bad DVR didn't exist back in 1984, because Sunday, Murder, She Wrote and Knight Rider aired at the same time.
Yeah.
And I probably would have had to make a decision on which one of those to watch. I probably watched Murder, She Wrote.
Yep.
but not to say I didn't like Knight Rider. And I think in the spring it got switched time slots, so I had an option to not have to choose between those two. So that's what I would have been doing on Sunday, probably watching Murder, She Wrote. I would have taken Monday and Tuesday off and just not watched TV, because I wasn't super impressed with the schedules on Mondays and Tuesdays. On Wednesday, I probably would have watched Highway to Heaven and then Facts of Life if I was having to watch TV.
Yeah.
Thursday, I would have watched Cosby Show, which was then backed up right afterwards with Family Ties. So I would have watched the two of those. And then on Friday, there was a lot of shows on Friday. We had Mr. Belvedere, Benson, Webster, Knight Rider in the spring. So a lot of shows to watch on Friday, and I'm not going to be afraid to admit that on Saturday I probably from time to time would have checked out Mama's Family.
Mama's Family was awesome.
So those were probably the main shows that I would have watched. I wasn't huge on some of the sitcoms in the mid 80s for some reason. Charles in Charge, Who's the Boss? I did mention Family Ties and Facts of Life, but there was a lot of that stuff and I didn't watch a ton of that. But not saying they weren't good. Anything else that you wanted to bring up as far as TV shows?
Well, because I thought we were supposed to make top 10s, because that's what's in the script. I did make a All top right. 10. Now, just because I made a top 10 does not mean that I think one of these shows is better than the other. This is just how I would place them.
For the record, I only listed 10 shows in my schedule, so I kind of did a top 10.
Still. Well,
just
still.
Instead of ordering them, I put them day by day. But what's your top 10?
Webster, Kate and Ally, Cheers, The Cosby Show, Three's Company, Who's the Boss, Night Court, Dallas. One premiere you forgot about this year, because it ran from 84 to 87, was Airwolf is my number two, and obviously Knight Rider is my number one.
I think everybody forgot about Airwolf.
Nobody forgot about Airwolf. People forgot about Airwolf when the fourth season happened. That's when they forgot about Airwolf, but the first three were all right.
Which, by the way, Airwolf was not in the top 30.
It wasn't, but you left it off your debuts list. Because it debuted in 84.
All right, so let us know what your favorite TV shows of 1984 were, where we're wrong, where we're right, what you liked about 1984 when it came to actual primetime television shows. We're going to be taking another quick break to give you some sound clips, and we'll take you to the next part that we will be discussing for 1984.
Mm-hmm. You're gonna like this.
Where are you going?
I have a dance to go to. At school.
New faces dance night.
Hi, how you doing?
What's happening? Hot stuff.
Give me my radio. I said, give me my radio.
You promise you'll talk?
Yes.
And most important, no matter how much they beg, never, never let them eat after midnight.
It's right here, right? It's looking at me.
Chronologically, you're 16 today. Physically, you're still 15.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Are you okay?
He slimed me.
That's great!
Here, karate, same thing. Either you karate do yes, or karate do no.
Wax on, wax off.
Your yesterday's news is got a great gift of talent, but it's not enough.
That there is a time to every purpose under heaven.
All right, as you can probably tell, our next stop on our voyage through 1984 is in the land of movies. And as you know, if
you're... Who are you going to call?
And as you know, if you're a fan of the Geekcast Radio Network, is one thing I like to talk about is movies. So a couple things about movies in 1984 before we get into actual releases. Walt Disney Studios establishes Touchstone Pictures to release films with more mature subject matter than the traditional Walt Disney Pictures banner. TriStar Pictures, a joint venture of Columbia Pictures, HBO, and CBS, released its first film. Michael Eisner becomes the head of the Walt Disney Company. And the MPAA, Motion Picture Association of America, institutes the PG-13 rating for the first time as a response to violent movies such as Gremlins and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Let me read that one more time. As a response to violent movies such as Gremlins and Temple of Doom. So PG-13 comes into play in 1984. And
Temple of Doom, I can understand. Gremlins, come on.
Yeah.
You know, and we're eventually somewhere on MWire or Weekend at the Movies or even here in the GCR feed. We are eventually going to have a podcast where we discuss the MPAA and what just strange, superficial people are on this damn board.
Yeah. Real quick, a couple movie stars that debuted in 1984, then we're going to get into the highest grossing films of 1984, and then we'll talk about our top 10 films of the year. Some interesting debuts, some people that are in the know now, maybe you don't realize that they started way back in 1984. Jennifer Connelly debuts in 1984 in Once Upon a Time in America. Johnny Depp debuted in A Nightmare on Elm Street. Colin Firth and Rupert Everett in Another Country. Sarah Michelle Gellar in Over the Brooklyn Bridge. Seth Green in A Billion for Boris. Val Kilmer in Top Secret. Let's see here. Charlie Sheen in Red Dawn. Elizabeth Shue in The Karate Kid. Jean-Claude Van Damme in Breaking. Damon Wayans in Beverly Hills Cop. And there are some other ones out there, but those were probably the main ones.
I do not remember him in Beverly Hills Cop.
I don't remember a lot of these people. I'd have to go back and watch the shows and be like, oh, there they are. As a younger version of themselves.
I do want to mention this, though. Helen Slater stars in Supergirl as Kara Zor-El, a.k.a. Supergirl. I had not seen her since Supergirl, and when she did a cameo as Clark's mom on Smallville, I was like, wow, Supergirl growed up to be really hot. It's like I haven't seen her in anything between the film Supergirl and the Smallville TV show.
Yeah.
So,
As far as the highest grossing films of 1984, because we'll soon be having an episode at GCRN where Dan and I revisit our box office predictions for 2014. And one of the things we said when we were making our predictions that in order to be in the top 10 for 2014, you're probably going to have to be over 200 million. Back in 1984, there was only two movies that surpassed that 200 million mark. Obviously, different time, different dynamic as far as the box office goes. Number one at the box office in 1984 would have been none other than Ghostbusters. Go ahead and talk about Ghostbusters for a second. I know you like that movie.
Ghostbusters is awesome. It just is awesome. The funny thing is I think that at some point I mixed up Rick Moranis in two different roles that he did. Between Louis Tully and Wayne Szalinski in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Swear to God. Rick Moranis is just an amazing, amazing actor, and to have the whole Keymaster and Gatekeeper thing, that was pretty awesome. I think this probably, as a kid, was the first Bill Murray movie I saw. But just the chemistry amongst all these guys, you know, Bill Murray, Aykroyd, you know, Ramis, may he rest in peace, and even, you know, even Ernie Hudson. I mean, you know, Ernie Hudson's character, Winston Zeddemore, comes into this as a skeptic, and he leaves as a believer, you know.
Right.
Between that, between Slimer, the Ecto-1, the Firehouse, this is just amazing. Just an amazing, amazing movie.
And I should qualify that somewhat. Ghostbusters is currently the highest grossing movie that was released in 1984. If we just took the year 1984... the number one movie would have actually been Beverly Hills Cop. But because of re-releases, Ghostbusters has since passed Beverly Hills Cop. But if we were back in 1984, the number one grossing film would have been Beverly Hills Cop. Then we get to number three, which would be Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Number four, the highest grossing film in 1984, actually was Gremlins. I think a lot of people don't realize how much money that movie made. Number five, Karate Kid. Number six, Police Academy. Number seven, Footloose. Number eight, Romancing the Stone. Number nine, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. And number 10, the 10th highest grossing film of 1984, Splash.
Yep.
So I don't know what that says about 1984. But as far as your favorite films of 1984, how would you break it down, sir?
You know, between Ghostbusters, Beverly Hills Cop, Police Academy, Gremlins, and The Karate Kid, you know, 84 was an amazing year for movies. You know, I didn't get into Star Trek until, and I'm still more of a casual fan today than anything else, but I didn't get into Star Trek until Next Generation. So all these original series movies, I just didn't care about as a kid. I'd rather, you know, go to a galaxy far, far away than be transported between the Enterprise and some barren planet. I mean, Karate Kid, you know, you've got Pat Morita, Mr. Miyagi, and Daniel-san and all that stuff, and that movie did a damn good job of showing us how, you know, we can accomplish what we set our minds to do.
Right.
You know, and just Miyagi was always so fun. He really, really was. Beverly Hills Cop, as a kid, I don't think I saw. I think I, you know, like you mentioned earlier in the show, I don't think I saw it. obviously. I mean, I was 4 years old, but I honestly don't think I saw it until like 90, because I saw the second one before I saw the first one.
Gotcha.
Because I kept watching the second one, saying, you know, what is he talking about when the guy says, oh, he was the guy with the cigarette truck that one day. And I'm like, wait, what? And then I realized, oh, there's a first movie to the series. Since then, Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2, two of the best cop comedy action movies we've ever had.
Outside of Lethal Weapon, maybe.
Well, I said two of the best. I didn't say they are. I said two of the best.
Gotcha.
So, what about you?
First, a couple that didn't make my top 10 that I'd like to mention, at least. Conan the Destroyer, Romancing in the Stone, The Natural, Once Upon a Time in America, 16 Candles, and Revenge of the Nerds all came out in 1984. Not saying those are bad movies, but they didn't quite make my top 10. Number 10 would be Police Academy for me. Number 9 would be Star Trek, Search for Spock. Number 8 would be Karate Kid. 7, Beverly Hills Cop. 6, The Terminator. Terminator came out in 1984, folks. Did not do well at the box office, but it came out in 1984. Number 5, The Never-Ending Story. Number 4, Muppets Take Manhattan. 3, Ghostbusters. 2, Gremlins. And 1, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
So, wanted to give the Muppets and Never-Ending Story a mention in there. So, you can let us know again what your favorite films of 1984 are. And we're going to buckle up and go on to our next stop on our voyage through 1984. So we'll be right back. Scientific gobbledygook Starscream. Nobody should be surprised that in our next stop, I mean, come on, it's TFG1 Mike and myself here. We're going to be talking about some cartoons. Cartoons of 1984, especially in 1984, we're talking about cartoons. You better bet your... I'm going to get profane out here. We're going to talk about some cartoons that debuted in 1984. We're going to talk about some cartoons that ended in 1984. And then, of course, our favorite cartoons of 1984. So that's how this section will break down. Cartoons debuting in 1984. Let's start with the one that we need to get out of the way probably first and foremost. And
the GoBots!
And nobody should be surprised here. The Transformers debuted in 1984. Would go on to release 98 episodes from 1984 to 1988. We'll both be talking about that when we get to our favorite cartoons of 1984. All right. The Mighty Orbots debuted in 1984. That would go on to release 124 episodes. Heathcliff, 86 episodes, started in 1984. Challenge of the GoBots started its 65-episode run in 1984. Jim Henson's The Muppet Babies started its 107-episode run in 1984. Then we had stuff like Kid Video, Pink Panther and Sons, Pole Position, Rainbow Bright, The Snorks, Super Friends, The Legendary Superpower Show, Turbo Teen, Dragon's Lair, My Little Pony and Friends, and Thomas and Friends started its 400-plus episode run in 1984 that is still going.
Is that the Thomas the Tank Engine
yes.
thing?
Yes. Okay. The UK wow. show started in 1984.
Oh,
that's
my
definitely...
God. I cannot believe that thing is 30 years old. I thought that was like 10 or 15 years old.
That's definitely the show that had the longest run starting in 1984. Yeah. A couple younger aged audience pointed shows that ended in 1984 here. We have The Biscuits, Shirt Tales, and Monchichis. So those shows ended in 1984. Nobody's crying over the ending of those shows, I don't think.
No.
Although I did watch Shirt Tales when I was a kid. But getting into your favorite shows, I mean, you can talk about some of the shows that debuted. I mean, obviously Transformers was probably the biggest debut. Outside of that, I would probably say Muppet Babies was the biggest one for me.
Once again, you left one off here for the debuts.
Which one do you have?
Voltron!
Oh, it's probably listed under a different country.
Voltron, no. Voltron came to the U.S. It's based off Go Lion from Japan, but Voltron came to the U.S. in 1984 with Peter Cullen and all those guys and everybody else, but between Transformers and Voltron, I was set in 84 for cartoons. If you add in what we've already gotten with like G.I. Joe and He-Man and
not G.I. Joe.
All the I'm saying if you add it into what we've already gotten from 82 and 83.
Not G.I. Joe.
Oh, that's when the toys came out. Anyway, you know, you add it in with He-Man, and you know, the following year you'd get a whole bunch of stuff. You know, 84 was interesting. Pink Panther and Sons, I honestly don't remember a lot about it. I remember the classic Pink Panther. As an adult, looking back on some of these cartoons, like Super Friends, all as it was, hey, this week, let's see how Darkseid getting into Wonder Woman's pants. That's really all it was half the time when Darkseid was involved. you know, you talk about a really over-the-top show. You know, Snorks. Snorks was awesome because it was the first time we heard Donatello without it being Donatello, because Junior was voiced by Barry Gordon. And you've got Michael Bell as All-Star. I'd have to say, outside of the action cartoons, probably Muppet Babies would be my favorite, because everybody was into the Muppets.
Yeah.
At this point.
What's your top 10 for 1984? Because it's definitely a good year to be watching cartoons.
Well, sadly, I only have 8.
Okay, go ahead with your 8. I'll make it up, and I'll give you 12, so together we'll have 20.
Pink Panther and Sons at number 8, Super Friends at number 7, actually, I only have 7. Anyway, because are we talking like debuts or
anything that was airing new shows in 1984?
Okay, so then I only have 7. He-Man, Snorks, Muppet Babies, Voltron, and Transformers.
All right, I will make up for you because I couldn't decide on 10, so I actually have 12. I don't necessarily have them in order, so I'll just give them to you. I'll start with the shows that were returning. The shows that were returning in 1984 from previous debuts would have been He-Man, Smurfs, Dungeons & Dragons, Inspector Gadget, and Alvin and the Chipmunks. As far as the new shows, Adventures of the Little Koala was definitely a show I was actually watching in 1984.
You have to go back and get that clip out of Toonkast Beyond episode 55.
Of which one?
The clip with him asking, you know, why is she all wet?
But The Adventures of the Little Koala was a show I loved as a kid, and as a 3-year-old, I would have been watching that, as well as I would have been watching My Little Pony and Rainbow Bright, because I had an older sister, so those two would also be on my list. Challenge of the Gobots was a show I was watching back then. Jim Henson's The Muppet Babies, Heathcliff, and then, of course, Transformers. So those are some great cartoons that were airing in 1984. There was a little of something for everybody back then. Great year for cartoons. All right, we're going to take a quick trip to our next stop, and you'll have to listen to see what's coming up here in 1984.
We celebrate the first glorious anniversary of the information fortification collectives. We have created, for the first time in all history, a garden of pure ideology where each worker may bloom secure from the pests of a contradictory force. Our unification of the force is more powerful a weapon than any fleet or army on Earth. We are one people, with one will, one resolve, one cause. Our enemies shall talk themselves to death, and we will ferry them with their own confusion. We shall.
On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
All right, next up in 1984, we're talking video games. We're not going to have a top list for video games because I was 3 years old and Mike was 4 years old. We weren't playing a lot of video games, and video games really, for all intents and purposes, don't really take off for another year or so. 1984 was much more dealing with stuff that was available in arcades, maybe a little bit of computer type stuff, and you know, some arcade type or Atari type games, but not enough for us to make like an actual top 5 or 10 list or whatever. The 5th Arcade Awards were held in 1984 for games released during the previous year. Pole Position won Coin Op Game of the Year, Ms. Pac-Man won Console Video Game of the Year, Load Runner won Computer Game of the Year, and Q-Bert wins Dedicated Standalone Game of the Year. For the 2nd Golden Joystick Awards, Night Lore takes Game of the Year. On June 6th, Alexei something, Patinov, created the Tetris video game for the Electronica 60 in the Soviet Union. Atari Games and Sega both released arcade versions in 1988, and obviously Nintendo released its version in 1989, but it was created in 1984. So that's probably the biggest video game thing, was Tetris being created. on May 10th.
Tetris was the new Pong, honestly. It really was.
On May 10th, King's Quest from Sierra and IBM PC, the first animated adventure game, the first game in the King's Quest series, and the first game to use the AGI engine is released. On June 4th, Nintendo releases a conversion of their own Donkey Kong 3 for the Famicom NES system. And December 17th, Nintendo releases the Ice Climber and Balloon Fight games for the Famicom NES system. Interesting to note that the video game Grand Theft Auto Vice City Stories takes place actually in 1984, as does Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain. I'm assuming you weren't playing many video games in 1984?
Not unless you count Barnstormers on the Atari 2600.
There you go. Namco also released Pac-Land. Donald R. LeBeau develops Gauntlet, which is later released in a bunch of different versions. Right. Also, David Ralston developed Paperboy, which would come out to Atari in the next year. So a lot of stuff, you know, coming out as far as, like, first ideas or first being developed, but not a lot of games or anything that I would have been playing in 1984. I mean, we had the Pong system and we had an Intellivision. But I don't remember exactly what year we had those or what year I would have been playing them. I don't believe it was back when I was three, though.
Yeah.
So
the thing about Paperboy is I didn't play that until it came to the... You remember those old Tiger Electronic handheld games? I didn't play Paperboy until then, which was 87, 88, something like 80, somewhere between 87 and 89. You know, so that's when I first heard about Paperboy.
I do remember Tetris, the King Quest series, but I wouldn't have been playing it back in 1984.
Yeah, I remember it, but I never played it. Like I said, you know, video games for me really didn't take off until 85, you know, when the NES put out the Mario Duck Hunt pack and all this and all that and everything else.
Right. Well, a good thing then that the time machine is fueled up, tank's full, and we're ready to go then. Just a quick stop at video games this time, but probably a longer stop at our next stop. So stay tuned to see where we go next in 1984.
Hey, where's the beat? I don't think you can play that now.
And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
Take myself, you take my self-control. You got me living only for the night. Before the morning comes, the story's told. You take yourself, you take my self-control.
Tell me that you want me. You tell me that you need me. You tell me.
number one pop music show, America's Top Ten, with Casey Kasem. This week, Van Halen. Steve Perry. Ricky Skaggs.
Honey, won't you open that door? This is your sweet daddy, don't you love me no more?
Our interview with B.J. Thomas.
On a two-car garage and a two-story house.
Plus, our exclusive review of the top 10 on Billboard's Pop, Soul, Country, and Album charts for the week ending May 20th, 1984. Now, here's Casey Kasem.
Thank you and hello again, everybody. Welcome to America's Top 10. Let's turn right to the action on the Billboard Pop Singles chart and run through the top hits in the land this week. Now, last week, Hello by Lionel Richie moved into the number one spot. Will it be at number one again this week? Let's find out. Falling two notches to number 10 is Kenny Loggins with his recent number one smash, the title song from the movie Footloose. At number 9 is a song we saw in our pop spotlight last week, The Cars, and You Might Think. Up a notch, number 8 is the first top 10 solo hit for Steve Perry, Old Sherry. Hanging on at number 7 is Rick Springfield with the second of the four movie songs in our countdown. From the movie Hard to Hold, it's Love Somebody. And leaping a fast four notches to number 6 with her second top 10 hit is a woman from Queens, New York, Cyndi Lauper with Time After Time. Up a notch to number 5, a song that's also a big hit on the country chart, Julio Iglesias and Willie Nelson with To All the Girls I've Loved Before. After 2 weeks at number 3, the Thompson Twins slip a notch to number 4 with Hold Me Now. At number 3 is Phil Collins and the title song from the movie Against All Odds. Up two notches to number 2, the highest ranking of the four movie songs in our survey, Denise Williams and Let's Hear It for the Boy. And holding on at number 1 for a second week is a master of the modern-day romantic ballad. The great Lionel Richie has the most popular song in the USA again this week with Hello. Pop Spotlight Song of the Week. It's the first top 10 solo hit for Steve Perry, the lead singer of the supergroup Journey. If you listen carefully, you'll notice that Steve's solo style is a bit different from the way he sounds when he sings with Journey. He says that's because he's gone back to the way he used to sing rhythm and blues back in the 60s. Steve says, quote, Journey stuff is very melodic and polished. What I sing on my solo album is much more gutsy. The Journey sound doesn't allow me to do this kind of singing. What I'm doing has the flavor of the early Motown era. End of quote. In our pop spotlight, here's Steve Perry in a video that features his real-life girlfriend, Sherry Swafford, in Oh Sherry.
That's right. It's time to talk the music of 1984. First, a couple talking points here. Dan Aykroyd and Bette Midler on September 14, 1984, host the first ever MTV Video Music Awards at New York City's Radio City Music Hall, an event which included Madonna's performance of the song Like a Virgin. So the first ever MTV Video Music Awards, all the way back in 1984.
It surprises me what stars they got back then.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd and Bette Midler.
To do these awards, not just the MTV Video Music Awards, but any award show, I'm always really surprised then and now,
right,
who they get, whether it's people in, you know, pop culture, whether it's, you know, actual musicians or whatever, or movie star. It just, it always surprises me who they get to host the stuff, because outside of Billy Crystal, you know. Like, Billy is the standard, and I know this isn't music related here, but Billy Crystal is the standard man to do a hosting job, because he knows how to do it, he has the timing. Everybody else that I've seen in the last 30 years, they've all sucked in one way or another.
Yeah, a lot of them have. On January 27, 1984, Michael Jackson's scalp is burned during the filming of a Pepsi commercial, and he is admitted to the hospital. That was when he was doing, about to release the Thriller album, so you might remember his head catching on fire during a Pepsi commercial. On March 1st, 1984, Sting plays his last concert with the Police at the end of the Synchronicity Tour. The band takes a pause after the tour and only play a few special events together after this until 2007, when they would reunite as a kind of a reunion tour thing. So 1984, the last time for Sting and the Police. April 1st, 1984, on a sad note, Marvin Gaye is shot and killed during an argument with his father. September 2nd, 1984, Van Halen concludes his 1984 world tour with a show in Nuremberg, Germany, as part of the Monsters of Rock Festival tour. This would be the last concert with David Lee Roth as lead singer until they reunited in 2007.
All right, gotta ask, are you David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar?
Neither.
Really?
Not a big Van Halen fan.
Ah.
But apparently 2007 was a good year to reunite since Sting and the Police and Van Halen and all this other stuff. All right. September 21st, 1984, the first compact disc manufacturing plant in North America opens in Terre Haute, Indiana. CDs have previously had been too expensive because they were imported from Japan or West Germany. Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA is designated as the first CD ever made in the United States. This happened in 1984.
I had that.
So, compact disc coming to the United States in 1984. November 20th, 1984, Michael Jackson receives a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame directly in front of Man's Chinese Theater. Jackson leaves after only 3 minutes at the request of security as the crush of 5,000 onlookers becomes a safety concern. Some groups, musical groups formed in 1984, Diamond Rio.
Yeah, I can't imagine them forming any. Some of these groups that are on here I can imagine, but some like Diamond Rio, like I didn't know about them. Of course, I wasn't listening to country music back in the 80s, but
it's a long journey for them to become big.
I know, right?
Exposé, New Kids on the Block,
yep.
The Offspring, and Soundgarden all forming in 1984. A couple oldies as far as groups disbanded in 1984, the end of Styx and the end of Kansas. A lot of people like those bands. Just getting in, I don't know if you picked artists or if you picked albums. I went with songs, and these are my favorite songs of 1984 in no particular order. Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper, When Doves Cry by Prince, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, theme from Ghostbusters, Madonna's Like a Virgin, 99 Red Balloons, Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA, Forever Young, Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA. That's a pretty iconic song. I Want to Know What Love Is, Summer of 69, and You Spin Me Right Round, Baby, Right Round. What about you?
I didn't write too many notes about this because it's pretty much all in my head. And the only album I wrote down on that one album because it just, even today I can listen to at least six or seven of the songs off of it. I can agree with all your selections, but for me, it all came down to Hall & Oates and their album Big Bam Boom. Hall & Oates was, they were and still are the duo to beat. They really are. There's not a lot of duos in music. There just isn't. There's either, you know, three, four, five member groups, or they're solo artists.
No Sonny and Cher Love?
Not really.
Just kidding.
but I mean, in the 80s, where the hell were Sonny and Cher? You know what I mean? It's like in the 80s, Hall & Oates was the duo to beat, and nobody could do it. But with Big Bam Boom, they had stuff like Method of Modern Love, Out of Touch, Dance on Your Knees, stuff like that. I actually just wrote up a retrospective album review about their Big Bam Boom album because it was obviously the 30th anniversary and whatever else. That's over on geekastrated.com. You know, I'd have to go back and look at songs and stuff, but there really wasn't many full albums that I was listening to as a kid. Like, Born in the USA, I destroyed that cassette from listening to the same tracks over and over and over again. I mean, like, the tape actually wore out in my tape player.
I can believe that. I wasn't listening to CDs at the time. This is more of a retro look back at what songs I like now that came out in 1984. In 1984, I would have been listening to Strictly Oldies or whatever my parents were listening to, which probably would have been a variety of things that wouldn't have been airing on any type of radio station. So it wasn't until 1989 that I was allowed to listen to pop music.
Okay, now let's talk about this, because you weren't allowed to listen to pop music
For a long time. I mean, I didn't have control of the radio when I was a kid, obviously, and I didn't have a radio in my room like everybody does now, or a computer, this, that, and the other. So it was basically whatever the family would put on the tape player, the record player, the 8-track player, whatever it would be, which was a variety of old classical, not classic, like classical music, but like Simon and Garfunkel type stuff, stuff like that, some old country stuff, right. Like talking like Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash era type stuff, maybe some gospel music of some sort, I'm guessing, different stuff like that. But I wasn't really, you know, we had our major stations that would play like, you know, your top 40 hits or whatever. I was not allowed to listen to that stuff. My first exposure was on a field trip in school on the bus, and the bus played Red Hot Chili Peppers, Under the Bridge. was the first song that I had heard that was probably like a top 40 song that I was hearing on the radio, and I was like, it blew my mind. But yeah, as far as like in my room or this, that, and the other, I was allowed to listen to like oldies of, you know, 40s, 50s music, maybe a tiny bit of early 60s music, not like the hippie 60s, 70s stuff, but like the oldie stuff. Yeah, so that's all I was allowed to listen to as a kid, which I don't necessarily regret, because I don't like a lot of the music that was out at that time, but looking back at it, these are songs that I can enjoy now.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, my parents were definitely, they weren't necessarily filtering like the cartoons I was watching, or the, you know, I would watch like primetime shows with them, but they definitely tried to filter the music.
Yeah, see, the reason why I bring this up is because I have an interesting story about this. It was third or fourth grade, so probably somewhere around 88, 89. I know we're talking about 84, but somewhere around 88 or 89, my elementary school had a rule that you could not say or write anything about your listening to hard rock or thinking about girls. I don't know why the school had this rule, but if you said any of those things, or, you know, wrote down any of those things in a journal or whatever else, they would, you know, give you detention or whatever, or suspend you or whatever else. It was really, really weird. But for me, where the story comes in is when I, you know, growing up in Massachusetts, I don't know what it's like in, you know, for you in Illinois, Chicago and all that stuff. But growing up in Boston, you know, suburbs of Boston, Massachusetts, South Shore, Massachusetts, that's all we had was the top 40 pop. And I mean, they played classic stuff, you know, 67, you know, 50, 60, 70 stuff. But most of it was what's now, what's going on now. And that's all the music, like 80s pop and new age and new wave or whatever the hell you want to call it. That's pretty much all I knew. So when I had to move here to Kentucky in 93, I'm like, okay, well, this is a complete culture shock. There are no flipping mountains or trees anywhere. This place is just so barren. It's nothing but corn and tobacco fields. It's like, oh my God. Like, for 3.5 years, 93 to 95, 96, all as I listened to was country music, because that's the only music I thought they had here. And then I changed the channel. Like, oh, that's music I remember from when I was a kid. You know, it's like, you know, the 80s, 90s, and now channel or whatever else. It's like, hey, I remember that. Yay, I don't have to listen to country anymore. That's good.
Nice. Yeah, definitely some stuff to choose from in 1984. Obviously, a lot of Michael Jackson with Thriller made a lot of headlines, a lot of awards and stuff like that. I was trying to think as far as Grammys go. I know Michael Jackson's Thriller was song, or not song of the year, was album of the year. The song of the year was actually Every Breath You Take by Sting.
I thought that was him and the Police. But
and the Police, Sting and the Police, song of the year, Every Breath You Take. Best New Artist was Culture Club. Record of the year was Beat It by Michael Jackson. Album of the year, Thriller by Michael Jackson. So yeah, that as far as the awards winners go. And as far as the number one albums of 1984, just a real quick rundown. You had Michael Jackson's Thriller, the soundtrack to Footloose, Huey Lewis and the News, Sports, Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, Prince's Purple Rain. Those were the only albums that hit the number one spot for the year. So, all right. Two more stops on our voyage through 1984. So we'll take a quick break and be right back with our next pit stop in 1984.
Introducing a new factory with 10% real juice. New life.
Drink up the juice and I see blood. A burst of juice in every glass.
7-Up doesn't have juice.
We got the taste, we got the twist.
Sprite doesn't have juice.
We got the juice, the others miss. We got the juice, we got the slash. Sprite, Sprite, we got the taste that no one has. New Sprite, we got the juice.
Diet too.
Sprite. All right, next up. On our trip through 1984, you probably can't quite tell based on those sound clips, but we're talking about things that began or ended in 1984. So it's beginnings and endings. And first up, some people that were born. There's a trend here of of female pop stars, I guess. Catherine McPhee, Mandy Moore, Fantasia, Avril Lavigne, Ashley Simpson, and Kelly Osbourne, all born in 1984. For the acting world, I guess you have Olivia Wilde and Scarlett Johansson. And from the sports world, you have Prince Fielder, Carmelo Anthony, Tim Lincecum, and LeBron James, among some others. So those are the people that were born in 1984 that we wanted to bring up. As far as some deaths from 1984, we already talked about Marvin Gaye being shot. English comedian Tommy Cooper suffers a massive heart attack and dies while live on TV. Count Basie, Jack Barry, Andy Kaufman, Vincent J. McMahon, Richard Burton, Truman Capote, and Jack Mercer. You want to talk about those for a second?
Sure, I guess. Vincent J. McMahon, that's Vince's dad, right? So that's wrestling. With the birth, it's kind of it's interesting that some of these women are only 30 years old. Because some of them nowadays, they look so much older. I mean, Avril Lavigne, she still looks like she's 10 years old. And that's not her fault because of her height. Mandy Moore has done an interesting turn with her career. She started out as a pop princess. And then she went into acting and has never looked back. She was recently in a role that I love, on a show that I love. Sadly, it's not coming back. She was on Red Band Society. It was interesting. She actually made a joke about her being, you know, a pop star. I was like, I know nothing about being a pop star. I just thought it was ironic. Olivia Wilde, loved her in Tron Legacy. You know, just simply awesome. Kelly Osbourne right now, she's got one of the best voice roles out there. She is the voice of one of the villains from Disney Channel's new animated series, The 7D. She is Hildy Gloom.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Nice. She is Hildy Gloom, opposite Jess Harnell as Grim Gloom.
Nice.
I know we're talking about 1984, but seriously, anyone who is, you know, looking for a good cartoon series nowadays, go to the Disney Channel and watch The 7D. It's amazing.
Amazing. I've heard amazing things about it. All right, as far as some products introduced in 1984, January 24th, the Apple computer places the Macintosh personal computer on sale in the United States. That's a big one. The Chrysler Corporation introduces the first vehicles to be officially labeled as minivans. They are branded as the Chrysler Town & Country, the Dodge Caravan, and the Plymouth Voyager. The birth of the minivan.
Holy crap, it's only 30 years old. I thought it was older than that.
Discman, but I'm not sure if that's like the official, like an actual Discman, or if that's a brand name Discman that started. Someone will have to educate us on that. How about the drink? Slice. Slice the drink coming out in 1984.
Between Slice and Crush and all these other weird... If it's not Diet Coke or root beer or something like, you know, grapes, hell, even grape soda. It just...
I think I always thought Slice and Sprite were the same thing.
No, there's no way.
Back in the day. Because I didn't drink any white pop. That's what I call it, white pop. 7-Up, Sprite, Slice,
you're
none
being
of it.
So racist against the white pop.
I don't like the black pop.
Oh, wow. Okay, then. Moving on.
Some board games that came out in 1984, Balderdash and Scruples. Advil did not start in 1984. That's got to be a typo. Advil started in 1984? That seems so weird to me. That seems like it's been around forever. Advil is manufactured by Pfizer and has been on the market since 1984.
Yep.
Wow.
I remember Advil commercials back in the day.
I just thought Advil was around forever.
No. Tylenol has been around forever.
Air Jordans? Or the first Jordan shoe in 1984. I don't know if it was technically called Air Jordans back then, but what we kind of know them by now. One of my favorite cereals of all time started in 1984, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, folks.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Okay, can we talk about this for a minute? Because since this time, they have put out several different flavors. They have the classic Cinnamon Toast Crunch. They had, and now have again, French Toast Crunch. They're bringing French Toast Crunch back after 8 years off the market.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I know. And they also have Chocolate Toast Crunch. Now, I can speak from experience because I was curious. I've tried Chocolate Toast Crunch. It's not.
For a long time, I was actually on the search for Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I couldn't find it in a couple of the stores near me. And I actually went to Facebook to be like, where can I get Cinnamon Toast Crunch? And then somebody finally gave me a store I could find it at. I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Yeah. The adult diaper Depends. Starts in 1984.
Moving on.
So that has not been around forever. Only 30 years, guys. The gum Extra. I'm sure you can all picture Extra commercials in your head. Started in 1984.
I can picture the Doublemint Twins a little bit more, but yeah.
Talk and Play, the toy. Started in 1984. Pop Secret of microwave popcorn started in
1984. That's only 30 years old. Holy crap. I thought that was around for forever.
And Plain Talk, which is one of the first, which would eventually be like the type of talking like Mac Talk or stuff like when you hear like Wally, they use.
Yeah, it's voice modulation.
Plain Talk.
Yep.
Stuff like that kind of first developed in 1984. So, yeah, a lot of stuff coming out in 1984 for the first time, even some stuff that we thought was around for much longer than that. Maybe some other cars that I would bring out that came out in 1984. The Dodge Daytona. We talked about the Dodge Caravan, Ferrari Testarossa, Bentley 8, Austin Montego, Saab 9000, Toyota 4Runner. Let's see, Pontiac Fiero, Mercedes-Benz W124, Jeep Cherokee, Ford Tempo. So those were some of the cars of 1984. Anything else that began or ended that you wanted to bring up about 1984?
No, I think that's about it.
All right, then we have one more stop to go to. We'll be right back to talk about some other notable events of 1984.
Morning, officers. What, y'all the second team?
We're the first team.
Yeah. We're not going to fall for a banana in the tailpipe.
You're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
It should be more natural, brother. It should flow out like this. Look, man, I ain't falling for no banana in my tailpipe. See, that's more natural for us. You've been hanging out with this dude too long.
All right, our last stop in our voyage through 1984. The notables. Any other notable event or fad for 1984 is stuff we're going to be talking about right now. A few things here. United States researchers announced their discovery of the AIDS virus in 1984. The world-renowned, critically acclaimed Canadian entertainment company Cirque du Soleil is founded in 1984. Vanessa L. Williams becomes the first Miss America to resign when she surrenders her crown after nude photos of her appear in Penthouse. Dun, dun, dun. November 6, 1984, guess what? This is an election year. Ronald Reagan defeats Walter Mondale with 59% of the popular vote, the highest since Richard Nixon's 61% in 1972. Walter Mondale only won his home state. That was all. Tom Clancy wrote The Hunt for Red October. In the world of sports, Los Angeles Raiders win the Super Bowl over the Washington Redskins 38-9. In the Orange Bowl, the Miami Hurricanes won their first national championship over the Nebraska Cornhuskers, 31-30. Doug Flutie won the Heisman Trophy. In the World Series, the Detroit Tigers win 4-1 over the San Diego Padres. Donald Sterling relocates the San Diego Clippers to Los Angeles Clippers. By the way, back to that World Series, the Cubs did make the playoffs in 1984. I would just like to point that out.
But I said earlier that how long has it been since they had a championship?
Yeah, that's what I said. But they have made the playoffs a few times. This was one of those years.
Yeah, before you move on, we got to talk about Sterling. Oh my God. It's 30 years from when he relocates the Clippers from San Diego to LA. 30 years from 84, he would then be pushed out because of comments he made.
Right.
Oh, God.
Full circle here. In the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship, Georgetown beat Houston 84-75. In the NBA Finals, Boston Celtics beat the Lakers 4-3.
Woo-hoo!
NBA draft notes. A new era in the NBA is born in 1984 when Hakeem Olajuwon, Michael Jordan, and Charles Barkley are all drafted. World Figure Skating Championships. I bring this up just because I was watching it probably because my mom loves figure skating. The men's champion was Scott Hamilton. The ladies' champion was Katarina Witt. 1984 Summer Olympics take place at Los Angeles. USA wins the most medals and the most gold medals. The Soviet Union boycotted the 1984 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles. 1984 Winter Olympics take place at Sarajevo. USSR wins the most medals, and the GDR wins the most gold medals. I don't know what the GDR is.
Probably something German.
All right. How about some wrestling notes? In May of 1984, in what becomes a failed attempt to garner a greater appeal outside the Northeast, Vince McMahon bought a controlling interest in Georgia Championship Wrestling, an NWA member which held the lucrative Saturday time slot on Atlanta-based independent station WTBS, known as, obviously, the Superstation TBS, which would later be dubbed Black Saturday. WWF began programming began airing in the TBS time slot formerly occupied by GCW. They were not successful, though. Due to low ratings and viewer protests, TBS began airing wrestling by Ole Anderson's promotion as well as Bill Watts' Mid-South Wrestling, both of which garnered higher ratings than McMahon's WWF show. Later, McMahon sold the TBS time slot to rival promoter Jim Crockett for $1 million, which would obviously then later become WCW and on that channel and in that time slot. In the WWE documentary, The Rise and Fall of WCW, Crockett explained that his purchase of the time slot basically paid for McMahon's first WrestleMania. I got to take a quick break. Hold on.
Yep.
Pick up with your reaction to the WWF thing.
Yeah. There's going to be a bit of a silence, so okay. 402. Yeah, WWE or WWF or whatever the hell they call themselves these days. $1 million to put on the first WrestleMania. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And you think about it. $1 million today to someone like Vince McMahon is chump change.
Yeah.
You know, back then, I can only imagine what $1 million gets you for a WrestleMania. And WrestleMania has been around for 30-something years now, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, it was definitely a major event, considering I never knew that they had that TBS time slot, and they had that that they sold that would eventually become WCW, and that would pay for WrestleMania. I didn't know that angle. Also, 1984 was the year that Hulk Hogan returned to the WWF. He had been fired by the company by Vincent McMahon Sr. for appearing in the film Rocky III, which he saw as a breach of both etiquette and character, but was welcomed back by Vince K. McMahon, who obviously, you know, parlayed the popularity and the notoriety that he got from Rocky into a kind of a celebrity status. And we all know what happened to Hulk Hogan afterwards.
Oh my God, Hulk.
He was pushed to number one status, main event status, in 1984 as number one contender for Iron Sheik's WWF Championship. He defeated the Iron Sheik at Madison Square Garden in January of 1984 and obviously became the most recognizable and popular face in sports entertainment.
Hulk Hogan is to the 80s what John Cena is now to the WWE Universe.
Right, and what Steve Austin was in the 90s.
Yeah, exactly. Steve Austin, Kurt Angle, all those guys. But look at Hulk. Hulk is the only one that I remember that actually faced down the Giant.
Right.
It faced down Andre the Damn Giant. Like, it just doesn't get any better than that. It really doesn't.
As far as other wrestling champions back in the day, Intercontinental Champions in 1984 would have been Tito Santana and Greg Valentine. World titles would have gone to, like I said, Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan. Tag titles to the Soul Patrol, Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson, and Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch. And then in the NWA, we had Ric Flair, Harley Race, and Kerry Von Erich. In the world of comics, The Kid Who Collects Spider-Man, written by Roger Stern, with art by Ron Frenz and Terry Austin, is published in The Amazing Spider-Man number 248. story is later selected as one of the top 10 Spider-Man stories of all time by Wizard Magazine. And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, published by Mirage Studio, premieres at a comic book convention in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So that's when that started. How far did a dollar go in 1984? Well, if you wanted to go to see a movie, it would have only cost you $2.50. And if you wanted a gallon of gas, it would only cost you $1.10.
Now, we got to talk about the gas thing. Because lately, in the last year and a half or so, gas has fluctuated. Like, there have been some states when it was at 97 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, gas is all over the place. But, you know, back then in 84, $1.10 a gallon, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I can definitely... That would be...
It'd be really nice.
Nice get on the you, budget.
Yeah, exactly, you think?
Definitely like, be nice.
If you had a car, because I think my mom's car is either a 10 or 11 gallon tank, if to fill it up, $10 or $11, that would be just great on the budget. That would be amazing.
Yeah, that is for sure. As far as toys go, talk a little bit about some toys from 1984. Probably the top-selling toys of 1984. I don't have specific data because it's really hard to find information on the internet as far as which companies or which products actually sold the most. I don't know if people don't want that to come out because they think people are going to use that to advantage in future marketing or whatever. But according to most sources, Care Bears and Cabbage Patch Kids dolls were the top sellers in 1984. Obviously, this is, again, going to be the year of the debut for
Transformers
that would be hitting the market. Star Wars action figures were still around and in high demand back in 1984.
He-Man was just picking up steam.
He-Man figures were definitely all out there. You had Strawberry Shortcake figures. Trying to think of some of the other things you had. Obviously, Matchbox, Play-Doh.
Was Light Bright out already? I know Light Bright's kind of a game and not really a toy, but was Light Bright out already?
You know, I'd have to look that up and see what year that started. Mattel toys, though, you definitely had your Hot Wheels, because I was able to actually find a Mattel toy catalog for 1984, and about the first six or seven pages are all Hot Wheels type of things. You had your Marvel Superheroes, the Secret Wars figures.
Yeah.
So there's a collection of those. I never remember those, though, from when I was.
Yeah, Light Bright. Going back to Light Bright for a minute, Light Bright was around. It started in 67 from Hasbro. So
okay.
I remember having a Light Bright as a kid. I don't know if it was specifically in 1984, but I do remember having
it. The Castle Grayskull and Snake Mountain playsets were out, as well as a variety of other He-Man figures. And vehicles and that type of stuff. They were in full swing in 1984, really. So that was some of the main things that were out for Mattel. As far as Kenner goes, they definitely had the Care Bears, like the stuffed animals or the little plush toys that you could get from life size down to, you know, a much smaller size. And all kinds of different accessories for the Care Bear line. That was huge for Kenner. You also had, what were some of the other things here? The Baby Alive. I don't know if you remember that. The Baby Alive that you could actually feed.
Oh, that came out in 84?
Yeah, Strawberry Shortcake Dolls, of course, were out in 1984, like I mentioned before. Let's see, what else did we have from Kenner besides Strawberry Shortcake? We also had... a ton of Strawberry Shortcake. Baby Needs, Name Baby Doll. Whatever that was. Those were some of the major things. Barry Baby Dolls. I don't remember what those were because I'm not a girl. Flip Crasher Vehicles. You would rev them up, let them go, and then they would crash and they would break in half, sort of.
I remember that.
So those were available from Kenner. There was also some Knight Rider cars available through Kenner.
Oh, don't even get me started. This was like kindergarten, so it was a year after this. But a quote-unquote friend of mine in kindergarten first grade, second grade. Brian Reed, I'll never forget this guy's name, and I'm not afraid to say it on air at all. Brian Reed, he had the talking kit car with Michael Knight figure.
Nice.
And he would never let me play. He would never let me hold it, look at it, anything. He was just one of those really, really stingy kids. And I understand that because I was one of those really stingy kids. But I let this kid play with all my, you know, He-Man and Transformers and whatever else I had. It was like I just wanted 1 second to hold that damn talking Knight Rider car.
Also, Kenner put out a Superpowers collection, which was obviously all the Batman, DC related characters, Superman, etc. The Easy Bake Oven, Betty Crocker Easy Bake Dual Temp Oven, as well as all the different accessories for that, was out. The Spirograph Plus. Everybody knows what a Spirograph is, hopefully. Otherwise,
yes.
Living under a cave or a rock or something, or I guess you're just not old like we are. Let's see, what else did Kenner put out? Rose Petal Place dolls. Don't exactly remember what those were, but apparently they were a thing. And that's about it, I think, for... Oh, Play-Doh, obviously, like I said, had a bunch of different stuff that was being put out by Kenner. That I remember playing with Play-Doh a lot.
Yeah, I remember Play-Doh, but I remember Silly Putty a little bit more.
Silly Putty was cool because then you could take the comics from the newspaper and like make them appear on your Silly Putty.
Yeah.
There was also some Ewok, like Wicket stuff, for like a preschool age to go along with some of that other thing. So it was kind of trying to play off of the Star Wars popularity. There was little play sets with Ewoks all over the place. Any other toys that you played with that you want to bring up?
From 84, honestly, other than Transformers.
Yeah.
I don't really, because my toys all were year progressive. So 83, 84, He-Man, Transformers, 85, 86, you know, Thundercats, Gem... Or not Jim. Thundercats, Mask. I even had... You'll be surprised at this. Once 86 came around, I even had all of the original Silverhawks toys.
Nice.
None of their wings ever survived, but I had the figures.
Nice. Those also a variety of sit and spins and game show projectors that were kind of like Viewmasters that were around back then as well. So,
you know, you were talking about some of the preschool age type stuff. Toys, I remember I begged, this wasn't specific to 84, I think it came at 85, 86, I don't remember. I begged and begged and begged my mom for one of those Fisher-Price color change flashlights where if you turn it up, the light turns green, you turn it down, it turns red.
Right.
And then obviously the middle is just a regular flashlight. So I remember having speaking spells and all that kind of stuff. I had a whole bunch of crazy preschool age toys for when I was a young kid.
The best toy, though, for 1984 has to be the beginning of Transformers.
Oh, absolutely.
I just want to get that out there so everybody can call us biased people. All right. So that is 1984 in a nutshell. The TV shows, the movies, the music, the cartoons, the games,
the sports,
the toys, everything. So if you have comments on your favorite moments of 1984 or what you think was the best stuff that came out of 1984, feel free to let us know in the episode post. And I guess we'll have to see you next time on GCRN. We'll be doing some more retros here and there. So if you like them, let us know. If you don't like them, let us know. Anything else you want to say before we close out the show?
I think it's only fitting that we mention... that Movie Revolt Dan was born in 1984.
There we go. The best thing to come out of 1984, Movie Revolt Dan.
I don't know about that.
We'll see if he listens to this. All right, then we'll see you next time here on the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hey, that was fun!
the shadows hide on the darker side.
Isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.